The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy, and how you can make the most of your own life, right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And whether you are ready or not for the conscience of psychiatry, here he is. It's Peter Bragan. And my guest is Adrienne Johnson, a dear friend of mine. And she's here appropriately on Valentine's Day. Now, there's a bright side and a dark side to Valentine's Day. The bright side is it gives guys who don't usually think about celebrating love a chance to celebrate love. It's encouraged. The dark side is, first of all, guys, what are you doing the rest of the year? And also, what about folks who don't have anyone in their lives to love and be loved by? So today we'll talk about love. Love between a man and a woman. Maybe we'll get to talk about cross-cultural love, maybe gay love. Maybe affection and caring and therapy. Maybe love and God. There's a lot of ways to talk about love. First, I want to remind you that we're getting closer and closer to April 8th through April 10th of this year, 2011. And it's appropriate to Valentine's Day because it's the Empathic Therapy Conference, created by myself and my wife Ginger and our marvelous advisory council of 40 or more outstanding professionals and advocates and citizens. Everyone is welcome at our conference in Syracuse, New York. You can come just because you're interested in issues pertaining to the good life, mental health, empowering yourself, your family, your children, or you can come because you have a special interest in how do you help people without psychiatric drugs, shock treatment, and mental hospitals? How do you help people who are really disturbed? How do you help kids who are out of control? All of this is going to be talked about. And we're having a marvelous, marvelous group of speakers and breakout session people. Adrienne, who will be on in a few minutes, is going to do a breakout session on cross-cultural counseling. And she'll be just moving about meeting people and greeting people on behalf of the center. And interestingly enough, more than any other conference that I've participated in organizing, and I ran similar conferences, somewhat similar, from the early 70s till 2002 with my wife Ginger, we have people coming from around the world, people who have heard that I'm running a conference again, and it's on empathic therapy, and we're also going to deal with critiques of psychiatry. People from all over the world are coming. We have several dozen or more than several dozen people coming from places like Asia and Africa, Australia, some from Europe and Canada, but a large number of people coming from far away, and it's just going to be really interesting to have them at the conference. Some of them will present, many of them will be participating from the audience, April 8th through 10th. And the way to just plug right in and get a hotel room while there are still ones right in the same hotel, or there'll be ones in surrounding hotels as well in Syracuse, is to get online and go to empathictherapy.org, www.empathictherapy.org. Or you can go through my website, Bregin.com, Bregin.com. So, Adrienne, are you there online like I hope and pray you are?
I'm here.
What a wonderful thing to realize that you're on with me on Valentine's Day, because, you know, you and I are very fond of each other, and we both have very loving marriages, which is really a blessing on this earth today. Yes. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to start with?
First of all, I just want to say I don't mean this sarcastically or facetiously, but I love that I am on this show, and I think it's completely appropriate we're talking about love, because I do love you, and there are different types of love. I love everyone in my life, and I love the experiences that I have every day to grow and learn and to continue on to develop spiritually and personally and professionally. So it's really a privilege to be spending today, of all days, with you on this show and all the listeners.
And let me add that although she sounds like a child, this is a professor of counseling. She's a very grown-up woman with a very grown-up husband, and teaches full-time at SUNY Oswego, where I teach part-time. SUNY Oswego, the Department of Counseling, where her husband now is going to be trained as a counselor, which is an interesting phenomenon that we could also talk about. Adrienne, I've noticed with the students, Adrienne has come to my course on psychotherapy, which I give every fall. In the spring, I'm going to be giving a course on critical psychology and critical mental health. You're very warm and loving towards your students, too. I mean, there's nothing phony in this woman whatsoever when she talks about loving the people who are around her. And your students, I've seen them just come up to you and right in front of me open their heart about one or another thing that they just wanted to get a little reassurance or brief guidance from you. So you're very close with your students as well.
Very, very.
Talk to me about love in marriage.
God, that's a great question to start with. I think love is expansive, and that's where I was coming from, and my mind went completely blank because there's so much to comment on. But I think, even piggybacking on what you just said about my students, I think a positive, healthy marriage comes from goodwill and compassion and affection and attraction and all of these things that make up what we think in our society as love. And when you show that it daily to your significant other, to your husband or your wife or your partner, it's showing love and acting in a loving way. It's displaying love and encouraging that in others. When you actually have a genuine positive regard in love for other people, for humanity, for human growth, that comes through. And when you are with someone every single day, they get to benefit from that, and so do you. So when I think of a healthy, loving marriage, that's what I think of. Just being in love with being married, being in love with your partner, and loving them.
It sounds good to me. Now, people get very lost in this process because there's a great deal of difference between being in love and being in a relationship. And relationships get us down to earth with our conflicts, our pettiness, our fears, our self-centeredness, our fear of losing the love, our jealousy. And I really want to help people understand that there is a dramatically important difference between being in love and how do you work out a relationship with a loved one. And there, a lot of things come into play that I work on doing family and couples therapy, like learning to be respectful, learning not to control, learning not to demand, learning to offer love and then seeing if it's offered back, not in a conditional way, but letting love come to you rather than trying to bully it or force it out of another human being. So ethics and a sense of your own security play a very big role in allowing love to flourish and go on, because so many loving people end up at each other's throats, even literally, because of bad practices in regard to how they treat each other. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Very much so. What I was actually wondering when I was preparing for this is, how do you address the major fundamental issues that couples bring in when they're trying to express love to one another but are deeply misunderstood by the other one?
Well, the first thing I begin with is I just ask folks if they love each other. I actually do right away, and I've had people come to me after years of one kind of a therapy or another, and no one ever asked them if they loved each other, either in individual or couples therapy. So I start out right away establishing, was there love, is there love? Mm-hmm. And usually people who come to therapy were at one time or another in love when they were younger, then came children, then came confusion, or then came an affair, and things have been getting rougher and rougher, and they come for help. So the first thing I return to is that I really want to help rekindle love. And if that appeals to folks, I give them a guarantee that if they work responsibly on their relationship, then they will be able to love again. Because love, for me, is like an eternal thing. If you've experienced it with a person, you can experience it again. And I've seen that time and again. So then the next step is to say, okay, we're going to assume that we'll find love eventually again, if not now already. Now let's talk about how you respect. And then I kind of talk about respectful relating. And that always leads then into a lengthy discussion about how each of them feels disrespected and misused. And so out of that, and I don't do much talking, I just do a little guiding. Out of that, by the end of the first session, I like to have some rules for what each of them feel they need to feel safe about being loving. And one person may need an absolute guarantee that at least for the next 6 months there'll be no talk of separation. Another may need an absolute prohibition forever on threatening physical behavior of any kind, forever, that should be. Another may need a sense of the other person giving up so much control and jealousy. And so I just try to find out with folks, what do you need to feel safe and respected? And that is a lot of what the therapy is then about over the coming sessions, which are usually once a week. It's about developing that respect and treasuring of each other, because loving someone doesn't give you any rights to them. Instead, mm-hmm. it should want you to grant them every right you possibly can to be themselves, to grow, to develop themselves. So I try to help people see that beyond love is learning to respect freedom and autonomy and to treasure each other. I love the word treasure, to really care about each other. And sometimes, and I'll finish with this one and give you a minute, Adrienne Johnson, Dr. Johnson, I'll say that things are going to be so much better when you're caring about each other as much as you care about yourselves, when you're protecting your partner as much as you're protecting yourself, when you're seeing that he or she gets what she needs out of the relationship as much or more than you are for yourself. That love brings that opportunity. Love brings the opportunity to actually place the other person's happiness on a par, and at times even above your own. And by when two people do that, a relationship becomes just a miracle. So there I am. There's my summary.
I like your summary. There's no way I could improve on that. Absolutely no way.
Well, talk to me about your own life with your husband or with your patients, and how you see people struggling over love. And also, I want to talk about loneliness.
Oh, yes. Oh, you know what? That's really good. A good subject to talk about, because I had a friend who, and a colleague who said today is the National Mourning of Singlehood. And I thought about that. And I thought about my ongoing loving marriage to my husband. And we've been married for 8 years. We've been together for 10. And every relationship, every marriage, every togethership has its ups and downs. But what keeps us going every day is a few simple rules that I'm sure you talk about with your patients, that don't go to bed angry and spend just 4 minutes, when you get home together, hugging and talking about your day. You know, you don't have to go into detail. That can come later, but just say, okay, my day was this. How was your day? And genuinely asking, so spending 4 minutes being genuine with that person. And then getting up in the morning, saying, good morning. How did you sleep? Did you have any dreams? Just spending another 4 minutes in the morning saying, okay, I'm interested in you. So showing that avid interest every day just for a few minutes really helps bond 24 hours a day for the rest of your life. You need to work at it. But I've also heard people say that marriage is work. Marriage is a lot of work. And I think when you are doing something that you love, it's not work. People ask me what I do for a living, what I do for work. And what I really want to say is I don't work. I play all day. I get to go to school and be with my students. I get to grow with them. I get to give them knowledge, and they give me knowledge in return. That's another thing that I love, and I bring that home with me, and I give that to my husband. And he gives that to me. He's now a student. You know, he's a student in one of my classes. And it's really, really fun to have that alternate perspective of what he loves about his professional development, his personal development, what he's getting out of class from me, from other faculty, and from his colleagues. He brings that home, and we talk about it, we process it, and it's really exciting. And that keeps a relationship healthy and strong. Always talking, always being respectful and compassionate. And I love what you said just a couple minutes ago as well, letting the person grow and not holding on so tight to meet our own needs, to not be so afraid to let go and to let that individual be themselves and experience life and have experiences separate from ours and know at the end of the day you're still connected. And it's so, so important. And for all the single people out there who are listening, I think today is an important day for everyone in a relationship and not in a relationship. And I say that tentatively because we are in a relationship with ourselves. Today should be a celebration just like every day, not one day a year, but every day to celebrate us. We should be our own Valentines every single day. Today is the day where we should get up and say, wow, I love myself. I love who I am. I love what I'm doing. And if I don't love what I'm doing, I love that I'm alive and I'm breathing and I have direction. I love that I'm going to find direction. And it's that kind of personhood and autonomy that carries us through the day in and out of relationships, and we pass through them all the time, and they can be loving and they can be beautiful. All of them can be beautiful if we let ourselves open up and let others be themselves.
Now, I want to tell folks that I have spent, and my wife and I have spent whole days with Adrienne and with and without her husband. And this is real. What she's telling you about herself and what she's found out about life is totally real. There's not a hypocritical bone in this wonderful professor friend's body. Golly, there's so many good things here to talk about. One thing I think is interesting is when you were talking about the rules, now, your husband's in your class, but one of the rules is that you don't grade him. That's just the kind of a boundary rule that goes into making for a good relationship, for keeping it ethical.
Yes, absolutely. When we process our days together, we talk about emotions and what we learned, but we do have a rule in that we don't talk about school or we don't talk about the program, because at home I'm still a faculty member. I am his wife. I am his spouse, his companion, his partner, the love of his life, just as he is the love of my life. But when it comes to that professional boundary, that isn't something that we talk about, because he can talk about that with his advisors or his colleagues, and I've got my own colleagues. And it's healthy to have that separation because we don't want enmeshment. That stifles growth. Enmeshment stifles growth. And part of that extending into the classroom is that I do not grade him. And I do assume a professional demeanor, as does he in the classroom. It's really kind of neat to see us fall into that pattern because he is a student in that room, and he is not my husband in that context. And it's kind of fun to see him participate because I do see him in a different light. And he gets to see me teach, which is different than how I am at home. But then when we go home, we get to drop that. You know, he's graded by someone else, and then he gets to come home, and then we're just us. So it's really kind of neat. I was thinking about that today. Actually, he'll be turning in papers and taking exams. And that, I don't know how to sound, but you know, I'm glad I don't get to see that stuff. Because then I get to I get to know him personally. You know, I don't want to see his school stuff. That's for somebody else.
One of the things that I wanted to pick up on was this idea of work, that marriage is work. And I've actually been thinking about it as you've been talking so positively about marriage, and I've been trying to think of what is the work. And I've now come to a conclusion for the first time in my life about what all the work is in a marriage. And the work is managing our own junk.
That's
the work.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
That's what the work is. The work is managing ourselves, our own overreactivity, our own fears, our own anxieties, our own jealousies, and even learning how to respond lovingly and openly to our partner when our partner is in distress or angry or even having trouble managing his or her own junk. So I think that that the work of marriage is to be the best person we can be. It's the work of life. It's the work of being a therapist. One of the mottos of our empathic therapy organization is bring out the best in yourself so you can bring out the best in others. It's totally applicable to marriage. So you start with love, and then you focus on being the best person you can be. And it's a very ethical and moral endeavor. And there's no separating that out, whether you're a therapist or whether you're just a husband or a wife or whatever your role is. If you're a loving teacher, the issue is to be loving, to be caring, to be open to the other person, and to manage your own junk. And boy, managing one's own junk is a lifetime task.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And, you know, we all have very different problems in relationships, and it isn't necessarily so that your spouses or your students or your patients or anybody else's problems are going to be, the issues are going to be yours, but they usually have the same issues, the general problems of some degree of guilt and shame and anxiety and some desire to exert control or power and out of fear and so on. And the more we can work on our own sense of security, our own determination to be the best we can be in the marriage or the relationship or the therapy or as a teacher, the more that the positive stuff will thrive and the best chance we'll give another person to be their best selves. I think that's really not a bad summary of some of the basic issues in all of life.
Yes, I agree completely.
What do you find as a teacher? I was so struck by the warmth you display to your students. It outshines mine. I'm more cautious.
You know what?
How does that work for you?
I take issue with that because it's not more or less what you do. You know, you are the most loving therapist, psychiatrist, and human I have ever met, or one of them that I have ever met. And I take a lot from you into my classroom. Every interaction I have with one of my students is another opportunity for me to grow and to learn how to let go and give of myself without expecting back. I get to disseminate knowledge, and in return, I get free smiles, and I get those light bulb moments that make their eyes shine, and I get students who cry, who trust me enough to share their fears, and not just over exams. I mean, I get to hear it all. I get to hear it all, and it's so rewarding. I cannot overstate enough how much I do love my job. And when I'm in a classroom, when I walk into that classroom, I am able to just shed my stuff at the door. You know, I'm not wrestling with my stuff. It becomes all about them. And they're energizing. Being in that room full of life and engagement, there's nothing more healing than being in a classroom.
There's nothing more healing than being anywhere if you are acting on the principles that you're describing, Adrienne, of really caring about the other person and concentrating on who you are rather than on what they're going to give in return. If you go into the classroom and leave your junk outside, or you go into a counseling and leave your junk outside, or you go into a marriage and do your best to leave all of your craziness and anxieties and to leave them at the door as well, then you're going to make the most of that opportunity. Now, it's not that we don't expect something from people or want something from people, but it has to come from them. So I'm sure you have expectations of your students. You want them to do really well. You want them to grow and develop. I'm sure you want your husband to be really loving and supportive and caring. And I certainly want my wife, Ginger, to be all those things that she can be and that she is. But the point is that the way in our world that you can have the most from others is by offering the most you can and then hoping that you'll get back the most the other person can give. And if a relationship is such, a friendship or a marriage, depending on your religious and ethical principles about marriage, if you're not getting what you want from it, all you can do is offer more. And if that doesn't work, you can leave. I don't think you can force something good. And that's one of the hugest mistakes people make as psychiatrists. They make it all the time as therapists, as husbands and wives. You can't force something good. You can't bully, manipulate, or control something good out of another person. What you can do is offer them everything you have to offer. Hope for the best. And if it doesn't work out, then you make an ethical decision about letting them go. Now, the thing about being a therapist is you don't make that decision about letting them go at all. And that's how therapy, and to a great extent, I think being a teacher differs from our voluntary relationships. Once we've contracted to be a teacher or a therapist, then you keep giving. And if the person doesn't give back, you keep giving. And that's what you give within those limits of therapy, which means you don't give romantically, you don't give money, you don't give outside of therapy, and so on. But the key here in almost every area is to give what you can give, and if it isn't working, you don't turn to coercion and frustration or deceit or manipulation or bullying. You just give more, and then if you have to, you exit the situation you're in. Does that make sense, Adrienne?
It makes perfect sense. And I love that you keep referencing ethics, because I think ethics has a place in everything that we do. It's a rule book by which we live. Our ethical system guides our behavior in therapy, in the classroom, in every communication we have in every relationship, and in our marriages. If you don't have ethics, there's no way you're going to have a healthy relationship. And I love that the same principles and standards of ethics that we abide by in our profession, we carry into our homes, and we live by modeling. When we model ethical behavior, relationships work. They may not work to the best of our expectations, but then we change and we accommodate and we assimilate and we work within the skeleton framework of ethics. That's how everything we do works. That's what guides
us. It's a perfect time for us to go into break. You're listening to Adrienne Johnson, Dr. Johnson, professor at SUNY Oswego.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Listening to a progressive moment on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down, or you're just curious, be sure to listen in, Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Down Mexico way.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world, every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Adams, the editor-in-chief and key writer of naturalnews.com and co-founder of the nonprofit site consumerwellness.org. I'll be starting a special segment on the Progressive Radio Network called The Health Ranger with Mike Adams. I'll be interviewing everyone from Dr. Jane Goodall to Suzanne Summers. Find out the latest in natural healing news and easy ways to live a healthier and more holistic lifestyle. So tune in on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern every week on the Progressive Radio Network to hear The Health Ranger with Mike Adams.
Driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
The Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, and welcome back to Valentine's Day with me and with my dear friend Adrian Johnson. I think it's time now to address people whom I hope we haven't lost already, who are thinking, yeah, right, easy for you to say, it hasn't worked for me. So I thought I'd share a few thoughts with you about my own life in that regard. I know loneliness. I know loneliness so well that there were times in my younger years, and by younger I mean 30s, not 13, when I thought I must be a stranger from a strange land who just really couldn't quite connect here on earth. And I'm not alone in that. Many, many people feel dreadfully lonely. Now, what I want to tell you is there are so many people out there who also feel lonely that there isn't an excuse in the world for not finding people to love and be loved by. I don't care what your handicap may be, what your repeated downfall may be. I don't care what you don't have to offer or do have to offer. If you can come to an understanding of what's deep in your nature in the way of the capacity to love, and make up your mind that one way or another, whether it's through counseling or AA or going to school or reading books or just getting out in the world, if you make up your mind that you are going to learn to dare to love, learn to dare to love, there are just so many opportunities around. And it doesn't have to at first even be romantic love if you've been stymied in romantic love. You could start out volunteering in an old age home. Start out like I did as a college student volunteering in a state mental hospital and realizing, despite everything I'd been taught at home and in school, that actually love was what really healed people. You could start out working with children or being a big brother or a big sister. You could start out in almost any fashion as a volunteer, at a hospital, any place, at a school, in a fire department where you'll meet other fire people. There are so many opportunities. And I remember one time when I was younger and I felt so desperately alone. And I also felt in some financial difficulty. And I thought, what would I do if I lost it all? And I thought, all right, I'll go find someplace out in the country, and I'll go and I'll knock on doors and ask anybody if I can help. Now, nowadays, you might get locked up for that, but you might not. You might just find you only got two or three doors down before somebody said, yes, I need some help. Folks need help. Folks are lonely. Folks need caring. If you're really lonely, begin to realize how much you must have to give to all the other people who are as lonely as you, and probably some of them even more lonely than you. Find a way that you can give. Find what it is that you have that you can offer to other human beings. And then work your way up that ladder of giving. And along the way, if you stay open, you're going to find someone who really wants to partner with you. Now, along that way, you may want to get counseling. You should get counseling without psychiatric drugs, without psychiatric diagnoses. Just find someone who wants to counsel you on finding how you can be more loving, and take a look at what you've been doing to get in the way along the way. Because I was doing tons of stuff. I won't tell you what I was doing, but I was doing tons of stuff that was getting in the way of my not having what I wanted, including settling for much less than I should have, including not figuring out what I really have to give, and so on and on. So if you're lonely today, remember the millions of other folks, and there's got to be some out there that you could give a contribution to. And that's what, in a way, our empathic therapy conference is about. Remember, learn about it on empathictherapy.org, empathictherapy.org, April 8th through 10th. It's about people who have learned how to give love in meaningful and useful ways. Many will talk about, some of them at least are going to talk about their own marriages, I think, you know, because we have some folks there whose marriages mean as much to them as my marriage means to me and Adrienne's means to her. But the whole setting of the conference is going to be one of people who love and care and who want to find the best ways to help other human beings heal. Adrienne, I'm out of breath.
You know, actually, as you were talking about giving to be a healing curative factor of loneliness, how did you find your way into volunteering when you were at your lowest? I mean, how did you combat and fight against loneliness with love that led you to volunteering? Because you could have done anything, but you chose to do that. So how did love lead you in that direction?
Well, I'm not sure I was at my lowest at that moment. I was a college freshman. I was at Harvard. I was probably my most scared. Yeah, I was really scared. I didn't know how well I'd do, and I didn't know where I was going. Oh, and I was desperately lonely. So I'll go along with being at one of my lowest, one of my many lowest when I was young. And it was chance. A friend came by, Michael, and he said, "Peter, get off your butt. Come on out. We just started a state mental hospital volunteer program at the local state mental hospital. And come out and visit and do something. Be good for you." So I went out probably out of curiosity. And I'll talk some other show about that in depth. But the thing that struck me when I got out there, and I don't know why this is so, was, "There but for the grace of God go I," which would tell you something about the depths of despair that I had known. "There but for the grace of God go I." These people aren't schizophrenics and psychotics and all these other things. These are people who've been overwhelmed. It was just so clear to me. They were just folks who'd been overwhelmed. And my heart went out to them. And that was really a beginning for me of getting a deeper understanding of life and relationship. And that was either chance or God that put me there. And that's all I have to say about it right now.
Wow. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot right there. I agree. I've had those experiences. How do you give that to your patients now?
Well, how about you? Would you want to talk about how you do that in counseling?
You know what, actually, it's a little similar to what I think you do, that I tap into my own experiences, and then I'm present with them during theirs. While they're sharing themselves with me at that moment, I remember when I've been at my loneliness, or loneliest, and my happiest, and I draw from those moments, and I am with them, and I have empathy, and I have genuineness and sincerity, and when they're sharing, then I share mine, whether it's verbally or non-verbally, and we bond in that moment. And I have found that that is one of the most curative factors that works in therapy. And it works with my students, too. When I'm present with them and I share my experiences, they take from those and share their own, and we all grow and build. And I think that's the foundation of love. When you give of yourself and you are there, and you draw on your own moments, you realize you have so much to give. And I actually learned in one of my marriage and family classes a long, long time ago that if there was really no passion there, you wouldn't love, nor would you hate. And hate is such a strong word. It's as strong as love. But when you are lonely in the same regard, that's a lot of energy that's going into that emotion. If we can rechannel it and do something and give that back, it's amazing the feedback loop that results. That, again, stems from love. When you love what you do, there's no way you can be lonely.
I think what you said about the hate and made me think of something really important, which, again, addressing folks out there who are lonely today and who have been lonely a lot of days. The degree that you feel loneliness, the degree that you feel rage about it, the degree that you feel crashing sadness or depression or even so-called clinical depression, the degree you have these dreadful emotions, to that degree, you have the capacity to love.
Oh,
because
yes.
It's all the same central source inside our souls. It's frustrated love that makes us want to die. And keep that in mind. As down as you are, that's how much you have ultimately to give.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. Thank you for that. I just grew from that. Thank you. I'm going to use that in my classes. That's beautiful.
And it is something I do use in therapy, and I use it in my own life. I have been through all kinds of loss and injury and hurt, not nearly as much as some other folks who come to me and who do even have done well and stayed being a good folks despite it. But God knows I've been through my own stuff. But I think it's a characteristic of being a human being. If you're a genuine human being, you're going to look at anyone who's suffering and say, there, but for the grace of God, go I. And if you're a genuine human being and somebody's suffering, you don't want to call them manic depressive or clinically depressed. Or you're going to want to call them a human being. You're going to want to say, that's being human. Human
right.
beings have struggled with these horrendous feelings. And the fact that you may be on the bottom or top, however you look at it, 3% of experiencing misery doesn't make you mentally ill or mentally disturbed. It makes you someone who has that much capacity to turn a life around and that much to give. And some of the most giving people you'll meet in your lifetime are going to be people who came from the bottom and grasped in the bottom what the way out was, what the way out is, and what it will always be, which is a responsible, loving attitude toward life. Responsible and loving. Oh, take a breath.
That was powerful. I love the way you said that. Thank you for addressing it like that. I appreciate that. I know everyone else does too.
And this has practical application for those of you who are lonely. Very practical application. And that is, don't feel sorry for yourself because you're lonely. Don't feel desperate because you're lonely. See it as a signal of how much you want to give and be given to. And then set aside the being given to and start giving and giving and giving. Not to people who are going to abuse you, but in places and settings where it's going to have a good effect. And that may not be an intimate relationship to start with. It may be buying a dog or a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It may be rescuing an animal. It may be gardening. It may be painting, drawing, or bringing a new attitude to work. Believe me, to bring a new attitude to work, it's almost inevitable you're going to be happier at work. So just start wherever you can in your environment, deciding you don't want to be lonely. You want to reach out and give and start on Thanksgiving, I'm going to say, because it's really about Thanksgiving. You start on Valentine's Day and do it with gratitude and thanksgiving that you have the opportunity to do so. It's the only way. There actually isn't any other way out but to be determined to be loving in a responsible way, but not subjecting yourself to abuse in the process. That's not being loving. That's being irresponsible toward yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's clear, isn't it, Adrienne?
Very, very.
What else do you think we should be talking about, my friend?
You know what? Everything you've said has been so powerful. It has been moving.
Well, you too. You too. I think we're really on target today. And
I agree. I am so fortunate.
And all these rules—they apply to everything. These rules and this idea of love and spirituality—it applies everywhere. And I want to add, because I'm tired of not adding this, that it helps a lot to have a concept of a loving God in your life. So if you've been embarrassed about it, if you think it's weak, if you think it's silly, keep in mind that most of the really loving people I know, including my wife, including her mother, whom I love, have a real sense of the presence of a loving God in their lives. It's a tremendous help. And for those of us who believe that, it's more than a help. It's like it's a reality. Mm-hmm. And I was very ashamed to think that way, and I didn't think that way for much of my early, desperate, lonely life. And I think a part of who I am today is because I've accepted the idea of a loving God, and I turn to that God to give me strength in being a better person every day and putting my own junk aside every day to be as loving as I can be. I'm not sure. I know we've talked a little bit about this, Adrienne. Where does that fit in your life and Corey's life?
We are very spiritual people. I myself am Christian. I was baptized Lutheran, actually. But at this point, even though I identify myself as Christian, I'm eclectic because I think spirituality and or religion fits into everyone's lives. And when people say that they are agnostic, I feel that they're searching, and that's a good thing. And when they say they are atheist, I disagree, because you cannot believe in nothing and get out of bed every day, or you wouldn't get out of bed. There are reasons why we are up and we are moving, and why we love and why we don't love, and why we think and why we breathe. And we all are going to be happier and more loving and give more and receive more if we accept a presence bigger than ourselves. And that really has helped Corey and I, Corey, my husband, to continue to be strong and maintain love and respect and affection in our relationship, because there's more to it than just biological mechanics. There's more to it. There are souls, and there are forces that move within us that are far greater than just our bodies. There's more to it. So I believe that spirituality can help and does and should help all couples, all relationships.
I really do feel that way. I live in a very secular town, Ithaca, New York, a university town. And a number of the people who come to me don't believe in God and don't wish to. And that's fine. That's fine. I work with what's in front of me. But I have a miracle that has just been written out on my IM, on my messaging with PRN. Ginger, my wife, wants to come online and say Happy Valentine's Day.
Aww.
She does not do this. Ginger, are you there? Is Ginger there?
Hi, guys. Happy Valentine's Day.
You Happy too. Valentine's Day, love.
Thank you. I've been enjoying your radio show today. You're both wonderful and very inspiring.
As are you. I am so lucky to know you both.
Oh, thanks, Adrienne. We are with you guys, too.
Well, world, this is my wife, Ginger, who we joke about. We say that she's the brains and I'm the pretty face behind this, because she never puts her pretty face forward and gets on the air. And God, I just want to welcome you. This is a present to me, honey.
Thank
that you come on the show.
I was hoping it would be, Peter.
You knew it would be.
Yeah, I was hoping.
and honey, is I think we're really covering important ground today. Do you feel that as you were listening?
Yes, I really, really do. I think it's so important that you've addressed the idea that loneliness happens at different stages of life, because I was lonely too, terribly sometimes. And I'm just really glad that I never really lost sight that there might be a great love for me, because then I found you.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you for that, darling. You know, Ginger plays such a role in my life that the reason why the second half I've been devoting to loneliness is because Ginger not only said before the show, you got to deal with loneliness on Valentine's Day, but she also put a note, a sticky, on my desk as the show began, saying love and loneliness. You're a great partner, honey. It's wonderful to celebrate Valentine's Day with you on the air and with Adrienne. And folks listening who don't have these kinds of relationships, don't give up. We didn't either.
Yep.
We grew to this point. And for Ginger and I, finding true love, I was in my 40s and Ginger in her early 30s when we finally got together. And before that, hey, imagine desolation. And I don't think that either one of us was really ready until then, because we'd actually met briefly 12 years earlier, blowing each other's minds with a weekend of platonic loving, and we weren't ready for another 12 years. And I think God finally brought us back together. So you got to be ready in your own heart. You got to be ready to be responsible. You got to be ready to put someone on an equal footing of importance or even higher than yourself. And I don't believe, I'm not sure I was ready till in my 40s. Get ready sooner, folks. Get ready sooner if you're younger. Don't wait to be as old as me. Adrienne, when did you get ready to love? Really love in a mature way.
You know what? I don't know that I'm there. I think I'm learning. I think I'm actually learning.
You guys do a really good job of it, Adrienne.
Thank you.
We are learning, and this is not some window dressing. This is not some BS to be new age or something. This is reality. Love takes a lot of continuous learning. Not to feel love. You can feel passion. You can do that spontaneously. You can be love at first sight, as it was for me and Ginge. But the learning is about being more secure in yourself and more caring, more able to reach out. That's a learning that goes on through different stages. Adrienne, was it love at first sight for you with Corey?
It was. It absolutely was.
Go on, tell us. You got a minute or two.
All right. I saw him at our college graduation. We were the only two Johnsons in line. I walked up to him. I walked up the hill, and he is feet taller than I am. And so I looked up and he was looking at me, and I knew that if I were to ever get married, it would be to him. It was his eyes. They are beautiful. I saw his soul through his eyes. Yeah. And I knew it, and we were married 2 years later.
Oh, that's lovely.
Love is a deeply spiritual experience, and then comes the responsible work. Thank you, Adrienne Johnson. Thank you, Ginger Breggin, for coming on the show.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's
Day,
everybody.
Listening to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Breggin and his lifelong reform work on www.breggin.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.